Hello, this is Derek Frost from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next hour, I'll be reading to you from the Triangle Business Journal. The content of this program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. And we start on the front page of the Triangle Business Journal. The headline across the top of the page, Duke to raise $100 million to upgrade stadiums. And this article runs horizontally across the top of the page. At the far left, there's a picture of a track. The caption reads, track at Wallace Wade Stadium would be relocated elsewhere. This article is written by Chris Basden with a Dateline of Durham. Duke University officials plan to kick off an effort to raise $100 million for an expansion of Wallace Wade Stadium and a renovation of Cameron Indoor Stadium in what would be the most ambitious facilities project in Duke athletics history. The fundraiser is scheduled to launch in the spring and last 3 to 5 years. Tentative plans call for the school to use the money to build a new press box and increase the size of the football stadium by more than 10,000 seats, including adding 24 suites and 700 to 800 club seats. We are very excited about the plans for the restoration and the additions to Wallace Wade Stadium, Duke football coach David Cutliffe wrote in an email response. He added that the fundraising effort would give the school a chance to change the culture of the program, and he plans to be a part of it. The role of a modern-day football coach requires you wear many different hats, he said, or he wrote. Duke's football team struggled during most of the past decade, but has become competitive, though by no means dominant, in recent years under Cutliffe's leadership. Tom Kaufman, Senior Associate Director of Athletics for Development and Planning, will head up the fundraising effort. He says the football stadium renovations are designed to improve the fan experience and generate more revenue. The running track at Wallace Wade would be relocated, though officials aren't sure where yet, and the field would be lowered by 5 feet as part of the renovation. The south end of the stadium would be closed, creating a bowl. Wallace Wade currently seats 33,000 people, and the renovations would increase capacity to 43,500. At Cameron Indoor, home to one of the nation's top men's college basketball programs, the goal of the renovations is a bit different. The Cameron improvements would be more modest, accounting for just 25% of the overall $100 million fundraiser's budget. Plans call for the lobby in the basketball facility to be expanded, and also for the construction of a club area upstairs. The renovations would add more concessions areas and restrooms, but there would not be changes in seating or courtside in Cameron. This is just a continuation of doing the things we need to do to build the football program and make sure that Cameron is up to speed, says Kaufman. Architecture firm HNTB is working with Duke on planning for the project, which is still in the preliminary stages. Kaufman expects to take the plans to Duke's Board of Trustees for approval in May. The construction timetable is to be determined, as it will depend on how fast the money can be raised. Asked about the size of Duke's proposed fundraiser, Richard Southall, an assistant professor of sport administration at UNC in Chapel Hill, says that's not small change. But there's a return. He says improvements such as those envisioned for Wallace Wade not only would generate more revenue, but also would help attract better players. Duke obviously has plenty of well-heeled alumni, but there are challenges in raising an amount as large as $100 million. Southall says that Duke, a private school, has a relatively small alumni base, and Duke football in recent years doesn't have a winning tradition to capitalize on. And the shaky economic recovery also could be an issue, since it might limit the amount of discretionary income that boosters have to spend. Still, the effort has some members of the Duke faithful excited. I hope people open their pocketbooks for it, says Eddie Falcone, a Durham lawyer and Duke graduate. I think it's a sign that they're serious about football if they do it. And our next article on the front page of the Triangle Business Journal, it's in the center of the page and running all the way down to the bottom of the page, takes up most of the first page. It has a black border around it. Inside that border, and it still has a white background, but at the top it has bold black lettering for the headline. Healthy Hospital Audit Reveals Solid Fiscal Year for Wake Med. Then right under that, on the right side, there's a picture of a man wearing a coat and tie, looks like he's sitting at a desk. And then the article is on the left side of him. The caption for the man pictured reads, WakeMed CEO William Atkinson has complained of unfair competition. And then under his picture, there's another picture of the helicopter at WakeMed, sitting on the helicopter pad. And then across from that, on the right side of that, there's a graph showing WakeMed fiscal 2010 facts that we'll discuss in the article. The article is written by Lee Weisbecker with a dateline of Raleigh. WakeMed Health and Hospitals may be coming under more competitive pressure from tax-funded medical centers in the market, but that didn't stop the system from posting better numbers in 2010, including slightly higher operating margins and a 6% increase in net assets. Revenue from taking care of patients rose by a modest 1% to $884 million. It was in late fall that CEO Bill Atkinson sounded a tocsin. He claimed that WakeMed would find its competitive position eroded if public medical centers such as UNC Healthcare in Chapel Hill and its Wake County subsidiary, Rex Hospital, were permitted to offer more and more sophisticated treatments while WakeMed was left performing more and more charity care. Atkinson rejected any connection between his market critique and the hospital's improving financials for fiscal 2010, but added, "This very unfair playing field is a philosophical and policy problem. At the same time, we haven't been sitting over here twiddling our thumbs." A just-released audit of the medical complex that treated about 1 million patients during each of the last 2 years shows, in fact, how busy Atkinson and his managers have been in making sure the hospital is run efficiently. During fiscal 2010, which ended September 30, the hospital system was able to shave labor costs by 0.6%. Primarily, this was due to a 2% decrease in employed labor, concludes the Charlotte auditing firm of Larson Allen LLP, which performed the audit. Atkinson says the savings came from not filling about one-third of the hospital jobs that came open during 2010. WakeMed, whose facilities include WakeMed Cary and WakeMed North in North Raleigh, is the country's fifth largest employer and has a payroll in the 7,000 range. Over the next year, if its financials remain strong, says Atkinson, that number will increase with the addition of up to 160 employees. "We are growing," he says, declining to provide a breakdown on the new positions. According to the auditors, labor savings in fiscal 2010 were offset by a 3% rise in clinical wages and a 37% increase in professional fees. In other fiscal 2010 findings, hospital net assets, the number left over when liabilities are subtracted from total assets, were $760 million, up 5.8% from 2009. WakeMed's operating margin was around 2.2% in 2010, up from 2.1% in 2009. It even looked better, 2.84% during the first quarter, October through December of fiscal 2011, says CFO Mike Devon. "We're experiencing good results in fiscal 2011, building upon the improvements started last year and anticipating more to come," he says. As for Atkinson's critique that WakeMed is assuming ever greater responsibilities for providing charity care, the auditors found that those numbers actually contracted during fiscal 2010. WakeMed, they say, gave up $243 million in charges in charity care cases in the 12 months that ended September 30, down 2.2% or $5.6 million from the prior year. However, in terms of percentage of uncompensated care, WakeMed still leads all local hospitals by a wide margin. As for whether WakeMed's fiscal 2010 performance was reflective of the state's hospital industry as a whole, officials at the North Carolina Hospital Association say they don't yet have a complete set of numbers. They do say, however, that 2010 seemed to break down into two distinct halves. Financial data through the first two quarters of the year showed a definite upward trend. Then in the second half came a reversal, says association spokesman Don Dalton. "We could see the operating margins coming back down," he says, and this was after several quarters of improvement, especially in the state's urban hospitals. Association Research Director Sarah Broom says the group gathers stats based on the calendar year and won't know the extent of the second half 2010 squeezed until the financial reports come in. "Until then, we wait," she says. And just to the right of that article, we have one last article on the front page of the Triangle Business Journal. And this runs vertically along the right side of the page. The headline, Sectors of Area Show Revival in Home Site Sales. This article is written by Amanda Jones Hoyle with the Dateline of Cary. Even before Pulte Homes began talking to prospective buyers for sites in the Davis Village community in West Cary, the builder had more than 900 people on a sign-up list. Within the first 2 weeks of the pre-sale period that began January 13th, a total of 44 of the 71 sites in Davis Village had been committed to buyers. At Pulte's Davis Village, the builder has already raised the base price for townhouses by 6% and raised the price of a single-family home by 10%, says Lawrence Lane, Raleigh Division President for Pulte. Townhouses now start at $166,900, and single-family homes start at $269,900. Does this mean that the seller's market has returned? No. But the numbers do speak volumes about submarkets such as southwestern Wake County that are clawing back to what in the real estate business is called equilibrium. Some background to explain. In mid-2009, the Wake County submarket, that includes much of West Cary, Apex, and Morrisville, had a 40.8-month supply of vacant but developed home lots, according to residential real estate research firm Metro Study. By the fourth quarter of 2010, the submarket's lot inventory had dropped to a 28.3-month supply, which Metro Study analyst Ed Dunavant says is in the range of what has historically been considered the equilibrium point of between 18 and 24 months of supply. That shows the demand of that whole area, Dunavant says. Lennar's Raleigh Division President, Trish Hanchett, says her company has experienced a steady rise in sales in Cary and in Apex. Lennar sold all of the homes and lots it developed at its Stonewater community in West Cary a year earlier than the company had projected. We don't even have an entrance wall at Ellington Place, but demand has been really surprising, Hanchett says of one of Lennar's newest Apex communities. At both Ellington Place and at its Bella Casa neighborhood in Apex, Hanchett estimates Lennar has sold about 4 units per month since they opened in June 2010. A lot of builders would consider that high performance in this market, she says. Most of its homes in Apex are priced in the $200,000 to $300,000 range. Royal Oaks Building Group in Raleigh recently purchased 23 lots in the estates at Bella Casa that will feature homes priced from the $490,000s. We knew it was a great location, but no one could have predicted this, Lane says of the community's pre-sale numbers. These would have been pretty significant numbers even back in the heyday. Donovan says Pulte has the advantage of owning what he considers a niche location because the site at the intersection of Davis Drive and Morrisville Parkway is one of the last remaining undeveloped sites near both the Prestonwood Country Club and the growing commercial area that's north of the site in Morrisville. I'm not surprised at all, he says, of Pulte's early sales figures for Davis Village. It's got location written all over it. And now we turn inside the Triangle Business Journal to the Biz column. The headline that starts it off, Commerce Chief Leads Delegation on India Voyage. From the Go Where the Action Is file comes this, with at least 4 Indian companies having made investment and job commitments in North Carolina over the past 2 years, it's no surprise that North Carolina Department of Commerce Secretary Keith Crisco is leading a delegation to India this week. It is the first ever State Commerce Department-led mission to India. The delegation includes 20 business and education leaders who will make stops in New Delhi, Mumbai, formerly known as Bombay, and Bengaluru, formerly known as Bangalore, to talk with local business and government leaders. In 2009, North Carolina exported more than $186 million in goods and services to India, with shipments tripling in value between 2002 and 2008. Department spokeswoman Kimberly McCarl says the cost of the trip is being borne by the department, by Friends of North Carolina, and by delegates. She could not provide an estimate of the costs. Triangle organizations that send delegates are Cisco Systems, O'Brien Atkins, SAS, KPMG, RTI International, and the North Carolina Biotechnology Center. pro sports leagues are very careful not to offend their sponsors. How careful? Well, consider this. Progress Energy wanted to display one of its new hybrid vehicles downtown during the National Hockey League All-Star Wide Open Festival. But the vehicle's tires were not in the Bridgestone brand, and Bridgestone is an NHL sponsor. Lori Okun, the director of sales and marketing at the Raleigh Convention Center, figured out a way to keep everybody happy using the universal fix-it, duct tape. Okun made sure that the brand name on the tires had duct tape over it when the vehicle was displayed. The duct tape eventually fell off, but Okun was soon out there putting a new batch onto the tires. "I'm one of those people, I'll do whatever it takes," she says. The Brooks Pierce Law Firm has added a government relations hand with plenty of experience in the field. That would be Elizabeth Beiser, who served as the Director of Legislative Affairs for the North Carolina Department of the Environment and Natural Resources from 2006 to 2010. Beiser now will be the Governmental Relations and Policy Advisor in the law firm's Raleigh office. Maybe NC State University Chancellor Randy Woodson will want a piece of this action. Raleigh's Lone Rider Brewing Company is teaming up with Ruckus Pizza, Pasta, and Spirits in Cary to sponsor the third rendition of Brew It Forward, a contest for amateur home brewers. The contest kicked off on February 1 and will conclude at Ruckus on Saturday, March 12, when the winner is crowned. Woodson is known to whip up some batches of brew in his kitchen and is not shy about expressing his love for good beer. Biz is betting he'll have to enter after reading this challenge. Do it, Randy. "We believe in giving people the opportunity to brew their own beer in a professional environment," says Lone Rider CEO Sumit Vora. Proceeds from sales of the Victorious Brew will go to student-driven anti-poverty organization Nourish International, as well as to the North Carolina Home Brewers Guild. Scheduled to run from 12 to 6 p.m., the March 12 event at Ruckus will feature live music and a panel of beer judge certification program judges who will determine the winner. The best of show beer will be crafted under the home brewer's supervision at Lone Rider's facilities and will then be sold commercially by Lone Rider. For competition rules and restrictions, visit www.brewitforward.com. Call it Windows on Durham, if you will. Installers and window sponsor Rick Fisher have replaced all of the 153 single-pane windows at the Durham Rescue Mission's Good Samaritan Inn in Durham with energy-efficient Weston Thermal aluminum windows. It makes the mission much more green, both environmentally and economically. Mission CEO Ernie Mill says these energy-saving windows and CFL bulbs at the Good Samaritan Inn will save $83,000 by reducing energy consumption over the next 9 years. He figures the savings will translate into 40,000 additional meals for the homeless and needy. Besides Fisher, others instrumental in the project were Larry Jacobs of Jacobs Glass and Millie Chalk of Duke Energy. The Durham Rescue Mission has been doing its good work since 1974. Lovers of jazz will want to hike to Duke University's Nasher Museum for a new exhibition entitled The Jazz Loft Project, W. Eugene Smith in New York City, 1957 to 1965. In the late 1950s, Smith took up residence in a New York City loft where jazz musicians, filmmakers, writers, and artists came to visit. Smith recorded the visits in photographs and recordings, and in doing so, documented an era of jazz, literary, and other artistic greats, including Thelonious Monk, Zoot Sims, Norman Mailer, Salvador Dali, and others. The exhibition runs through July 10. Overlooked in all the hubbub proclaiming Cary Sass as Fortune magazine's best on its 100 Best Companies to Work For 2 years running was Intuit, a Mountain View, California company with a Cary presence. Personal accounting software firm Intuit, maker of Quicken and TurboTax, was named number 44 on Fortune's list. The company extended its footprint to Cary in mid-2010 when it purchased communication software developer MedFusion Incorporated. Now called Intuit Health, the Cary arm of Intuit is directly managed by MedFusion founder Steve Malik, who serves as president and general manager of Intuit Health. The newest models of Aston Martin, Maserati, Ferrari, and Porsche cars will be on display, but the car will probably get the most attention at the North Carolina International Auto Expo event next week. Likely will be the first Spyker CA Spider to ever drive on the roads of Raleigh. Spyker is one of the rarest car brands in the world, and in November, the Dutch company struck a deal with Hendrick Automotive Group to begin offering sales of Spykers through its Cary dealership. Hendrick is one of 18 dealers in North America taking orders for Spyker. Until now, Spyker has been producing about 50 custom-made cars a year, but in 2011, it expects to sell about 50 cars in North America alone, says Karsten Priest with Spyker of North America LLC in California. Prices start at around $300,000. The Auto Expo runs from February 10 through February 13 in the Jim Graham Building of the NC State Fairgrounds. Maybe the folks at schools in Wake County will want to try to win a Brains and Bodies Award. How's that? Advocates for Health in Action, a Raleigh nonprofit, is rolling out its Brains and Bodies Awards to be given to elementary and middle schools, both public and private, that go the extra mile to meet and exceed local wellness policies to create a healthy school environment. To the winners will go a celebratory banner, community recognition, and resources for a school celebration. Awards will be granted in gold, silver, and bronze categories, with honorable mentions given as well. Schools may apply for the award at www.advocatesforhealthinaction.org. Well, here's a glimmer of good news in the carnage of the Great Recession. Or is it? MortgageDaily.com, a website that keeps track of such things, reports that fewer mortgage-related firms closed during 2010 than during 2009. The category includes mortgage companies, retail and wholesale credit unions, and federally insured banks. During 2010, a total of 201 such businesses either failed or were closed. That compares to 230 in 2009, which was the most since the Mortgage Daily began tracking the data in 1998. Contributing to Biz were staffers Amanda Jones-Hoyle, Chris Basden, and Cameron Snipes. And now we return to our full-length articles in the Triangle Business Journal. The first one we come to runs horizontally across the top of page 3. The headline, After Disastrous 09, Endowments Back Up. And along with this article on the far left side, there's a picture of a man casually dressed talking with a group of students who are dressed in athletic wear. The caption reads, Duke President Richard Broadhead Chats with Students. And this article was written by Lee Weisbecker with a Dateline of Raleigh. Led by Duke University and UNC Chapel Hill, two dozen North Carolina colleges and universities have crashed the list of the nation's richest schools, growing their total combined endowment assets to $9.7 billion in 2010. The values are contained in an annual study compiled by the National Association of College and University Business Officers, NACUBO, which tracks the performance of endowments at 865 schools across the country. Duke ranked 15 on the list with total endowment dollars of $4.82 billion last year, up by 8.6% from 2009. UNC Chapel Hill was 29th with $1.98 billion, up by 3.9% from 2009. Generally, 2010 was a rebound year for university endowments, which invest in stocks, bonds, private equity, venture capital, and other instruments. The survey shows that the endowments tended to recover the losses they saw in 2009, says Ken Redd, one of the NACUBO researchers who produced the study. Wake Forest University, whose endowment assets grew by 6% to $938 million last year, ranked 68. North Carolina State University, with $503 million, up by 8.5% from 2009, was number 126 on the list. The results for some other schools included Davidson College, 142nd, with an endowment of $428 million, UNC Greensboro, 268th, $171 million. UNC Charlotte, 355th, $106 million. East Carolina University, 357th, $103 million. And Elon University, 365th place, $101 million. Among the two dozen North Carolina schools making the list, Elon chalked up the largest growth in total endowment assets last year at 23.4%. A subcommittee of the school's Board of Trustees selects the outside managers who invest the school's cash. Gerald Whittington, Elon's Senior Vice President for Business, Finance, and Technology, says the university is currently wrapping up a $100 million fundraiser, some of the proceeds of which were used to grow the endowment. Beyond that, he adds, the school investment committee has made good choices. It is a committee whose members have a lot of financial expertise, he says. Closer to the triangle, Meredith College ranked 447th on the NAC-UBO list with an endowment of $68.5 million, while Peace College was 583rd with $40.4 million. The NAC-UBO rankings track the change in market value of the endowment's total assets between June 30, 2009 and the same date in 2010, not the investment returns they achieved. A number of factors influence total asset value, including investment results, withdrawals from the endowment to pay for school activities, incoming gifts to the institution, payment of management, and investment fees. NAC-UBO, which partnered with the Wilton, Connecticut-based Common Fund to do the study, did ask the schools for their investment returns for fiscal 2010, but those numbers are not released in the survey results. Instead, NAC-UBO produces an investment return average for all 865 institutions, and that 11.9% in 2010. In 2009, the figure was negative 18.7%. As of June 30, 2010, Duke University Management Company, which oversees the Durham University's endowment, posted investment returns of 13.2% above the NAC-UBO average. UNC Management Company, meanwhile, posted a 6.8% gain for the year. That was on the back of 2009's investment loss of 19.6%. In a recent report to the university's Board of Trustees, UNC Endowment Director Jonathan King called the 2010 gain a small step forward in recouping the losses of 2009, adding that the recovery likely will be a multi-year process requiring patience and discipline. And now we move down from that article, still on page 3 of the Triangle Business Journal. And in the center of the page, we have a article with a black border around it. Inside that border, the top half is a large picture of downtown on Fayetteville Street with a large crowd there for an event. The caption reads, "Thousands turned out in downtown Raleigh for the NHL All-Star Party." And then under that, in bold red lettering, is the headline, "An All-Star Boost." And this article is written by Chris Basden with a Dateline of Cary. January typically isn't one of the stronger months business-wise at the posh Umstead Hotel and Spa in Cary. Yet during the last weekend in January, all 150 rooms were booked. The average daily rate was up by 12% over what the hotel normally charges on Friday and Saturday nights. Herons, the ritzy restaurant in the hotel, was packed during breakfast and lunch over the weekend. Business was hopping so much that the Umstead increased its staffing by about 15%. "It was a great way for us to end the month of January," says Jim Beeley, the hotel's general manager. There's no secret about what delivered Umstead's booming business over the weekend: the National Hockey League's 2011 All-Star Game. While the events, including the game, were in Raleigh, team owners and their families stayed at the Umstead over the weekend. The official numbers won't be in for several weeks, but it's clear from anecdotal evidence that the All-Star Game provided a substantial one-time bump to the local hospitality industry, particularly to hotels and restaurants in downtown Raleigh. "I know hotels were full all over the place," says city manager Russell Allen. In addition to the game, many festivities, such as the All-Star Wide Open Street Party and the NHL Fanfare, were held in the center of the city. More than 31,000 people attended the fanfare alone, according to the league. It was incredibly busy, and we were just so excited to meet fantastic people from all over the country who love hockey, says Parker Kennedy, who runs the Cafe Luna restaurant on Harget Street. Matt Fern, the general manager at Poole's Diner, says that establishment's numbers were much the same as normal. The biggest difference was that the out-of-towners, such as the NHL's marketing and salespeople, took seats normally held by locals who usually eat there on the weekends. Nice as it was, the event lasted only a few days. There's only one NHL All-Star game, and it rotates from city to city. With no other major league sports teams and without the facilities to host a bowl game or a Final Four, Raleigh isn't likely to see another marquee sports event like this for a long time, unless the Carolina Hurricanes make the Stanley Cup Finals again. Yet restaurants and hoteliers hope that the exposure and word of mouth from the event will generate more business in the future. I wouldn't discount it all because it's a one-time event, says Raleigh developer and restaurateur Greg Haddam. He runs five restaurants, and their overall business was up 20% to 25% compared to the same week last year, making it one of the best weekends they've had in 4 or 5 months, according to Haddam. Those who work in hospitality weren't the only folks trying to make hay while they could. Ken Atkins, who heads up Wake County's economic development activities, tried to impress a client with the area by taking the prospect to the game and to the All-Star Draft. Hopefully we'll get an announcement out of it, says Atkins. Atkins also hopes that the NHL sponsors who were in town for the game took note of what they saw. Having people visit the area for conferences and similar activities can be helpful to future economic development activities, he says. Another big winner from the event could be Hurricanes owner Peter Karmanos. He's trying to sell a stake in the club since partner Thomas Tuse died in September 2008. Karmanos' efforts weren't helped by the Hurricanes' poor performance last season, when a veteran team with high expectations failed to make the playoffs. The All-Star game, combined with a better record so far this season, has created more buzz around the club. Richard Southall, an assistant professor of sports administration at UNC Chapel Hill, says that buying into a sports franchise isn't just about the bottom line, it's also about emotion. And there was plenty of emotion, pride, excitement in the RBC Center. I think that All-Star Weekend had to be helpful in selling a stake in the franchise, Southall says. Local security shop censored, fined by group. This article is written by Lee Weisbecker with the Dateline of Raleigh. The Financial Industry Regulatory Authority has issued a censure and a fine of $25,000 against Capital Investment Companies, saying the Raleigh-based securities firm failed to report required information on its trades dating back to 2006 to 2007. FINRA revealed the matter on its list of January 2011 disciplinary actions. The company, which signed a letter of acceptance without admitting or denying the findings, has agreed to revise its written procedures for reporting trades to FINRA's Order Audit Trail System, also called OATS, O-A-T-S. OATS is an electronic system the regulatory agency set up in 1998 to track order, quote, and trade information for stock transactions on the NASDAQ and OTC markets. All FINRA member broker-dealers are required to use the web-based system. Capital Investment spokeswoman Lynn Beeman said the Richard Bryant-run company has already strengthened its compliance team. And we have had no regulatory actions against us, she said. No client was harmed by this inadvertent error. Regulatory compliance remains an important aspect of the capital business model. According to FINRA documents, auditors examining Capital Investment Group transactions for a 14-month review period, July 16, 2006, through September 16, 2007, found 10,247 so-called reportable order events, new orders, routing reports, executions, cancel, replace actions that had not been reported on OATS over a period of 279 business days. An examination of capital investment brokerage transactions over the same period turned up 9,178 instances of non-reporting, also over 279 business days. The firm's supervisory system did not provide for supervision reasonably designed to achieve compliance with respect to the applicable securities laws and regulations, FINRA examiners remarked in the documents. Last fall, FINRA won approval from the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission to extend OATS tracking to New York Stock Exchange transactions as well. NYSE spokesman Rich Adamonis says no firm timetable for implementation has been set. Capital Investment Group and Capital Investment Brokerage are separate entities under Capital Investment Companies, a business set up in 1984 by co-founders Richard Bryant and Bobby Edgerton. With offices on Glenwood Avenue, it is one of the largest independent securities wealth management firms in the Southeast. Combined, the investment and brokerage units were hit with a combined $15,000 in fines for OATS reporting violations and a combined $10,000 for deficient reporting procedures, according to FINRA documents. Beeman says the OATS reporting problem sprang from, quote, an erroneous determination that Capital was exempt from reporting because our clearing firm does the majority of this type of reporting for us. Our issue was discovered and corrected in 2007, and no additional reporting issues have occurred. The internal controls around this process have been enhanced. Capital hasn't been the only financial services player to be cited for OATS violations in recent months. FINRA disciplinary records show a smattering of other cases in the second half of 2010. FINRA spokeswoman Nancy Condon says that doesn't mean the authority has been focusing on OATS compliance. When we see violations, we take action, says Condon. The order audit trail is important. I mean, it's one of those bread and butter issues. Now, our next article, it's written by Amanda Jones Hoyle with a dateline of Garner. It runs along the bottom of page 3 horizontally, but at the far left it has a picture of the outside of a Penske building. The caption reads, Penske is moving forward despite route option. And the headline, $30 million in land buildings in path of red turnpike option. A proposed southern route extending the Triangle Expressway through Garner not only would displace residents, it also would plow through an industrial park that the town uses to recruit new businesses. At least 26 developed and undeveloped commercial lots valued at more than $30 million in the Greenfield South Business Park would be impacted by the road construction, including a new Penske truck leasing facility that is under construction and scheduled to open in August. Penske officials have said they will proceed with construction of the $5 million facility, but they concede that its operations would have to be relocated if the so-called Red Route is approved. We remain cautiously optimistic that other viable alternative routes will be selected, wrote Penske Area Vice President Chris Anderholm in a recent blog posting. The North Carolina Turnpike Authority's Red Route option for the southeast extension of the Interstate 540 Outer Loop Highway runs north of Lake Benson. The extension would complete the 540 Highway Loop to Knightdale. Much of the land along the Turnpike Authority's Orange Route, which runs south of Lake Benson, has been protected from development for many years, and it was recently discovered that construction along its route could threaten the habitat of a freshwater mussel that is on the federal endangered species list. The Federal Highway Administration requires analysis of multiple routes before federal funding can be solicited, says Steve DeWitt, chief engineer for the Turnpike Authority. DeWitt says the agency is working through all of its due diligence for both route options. We hope to have some kind of something in the next few weeks, he says. It's a tough situation. The authority has eliminated three other route options that would have impacted mature neighborhoods in Holly Springs and Fuquay Varina. Ron Gibson, a veteran commercial real estate developer and one of three principal investors who own 120 acres in the Greenfield South Business Park, says the proposed Red Route would render most of his land inaccessible. We're watching and hoping, and at some point we will have to enter the fray if it's determined that that's the route they're going to take, Gibson says. Gibson adds that his land recently was appraised for about $3.50 a foot, which would value the assemblage at around $18 million. That land is pretty valuable, he says, and we'll make sure we get fair market value for it. The Red Route also skirts the edges of the Sigma Electric Manufacturing Corporation and the Pergo corporate campuses in Garner. DeWitt says land acquisition for whatever route is chosen probably would not begin until late 2013 or 2014, Once funding is secured, construction would take about 5 years to complete. West signs on for more space. That's the headline on our next article. And this article has a picture above it of two men, two middle-aged men, business casually dressed, standing in front of a very large West Brothers transportation truck. The caption reads, Tommy West and Craig West sold their company to Atlanta-based Brown Trucking in November. And this article is written by Amanda Jones Hoyle with the Dateline of Durham. The West Brothers Logistics Company will take over about half of the empty Anderson Corporation window manufacturing building in Durham for storage purposes as Anderson continues to adjust to a slow housing market. The 420,000-square-foot building in the Research Tri-Center Industrial Park on Miami Boulevard has been virtually empty since Anderson shut down the manufacturing line in late 2008. After Anderson stopped marketing the building for sublease last year, economic development officials had hoped the company would restart its Durham operations and begin hiring workers again. That has not been the case so far. Anderson spokeswoman Maureen McDonough confirms that the company has sublease space in its Durham building, but she had no further details about the transaction. Brian Kinsey, CEO of West Brothers' parent company, Atlanta-based Brown Trucking, says the logistics division will use about 290,000 square feet in the Anderson building for storage of medical supplies for one of its major customers. Kinsey would not identify the client company. The customer needed to relocate its temperature-sensitive materials, so we moved them to this location, Kinsey says. The customer has previously warehoused the supplies in a building in eastern North Carolina that was not equipped with adequate heating and air conditioning systems. The deal more than doubles the amount of storage space West Brothers leases at Research Tri-Center for its logistics division in Durham. Kinsey says West Brothers' expansion has created 10 additional jobs in Durham, but that doesn't even approach the nearly 430 workers who were let go when the Anderson plant closed. West Brothers employs about 250 people in the Triangle in its trucking, freight brokerage, truck leasing, contract warehousing, and distribution divisions. Jackson Revis of the Cassidy Turley commercial real estate firm in Raleigh was the broker for the lease deal. Chris Norvell, a warehouse specialist with the Cassidy Turley real estate firm in Raleigh, who was not involved in the deal with West, says the sublease contract will have minimal impact on the market's warehouse vacancy rate since it is considered shadow space and occupied by Anderson. But any time you can sign a 290,000-square-foot deal in this market is a good sign, he says. Warehouse vacancy across the Triangle region was almost 21% in the fourth quarter of 2010, but in the submarket that includes the Anderson building, warehouse vacancy was 9%. Raleigh Investment Bank claims partner cost it $55 million. This article is written by Chris Basden with the Dateline of Raleigh. A Raleigh boutique investment bank says a business partner didn't hold up his end of a partnership agreement and then tarnished the firm's reputation, resulting in damages amounting to $55 million. That's what Sigma Capital Group Incorporated, founded in 1995, alleges in a federal lawsuit that it filed against Youngstown, Ohio businessman Carl Avers and several other defendants in January. According to the complaint, Avers approached Sigma in early 2009 about teaming up to raise money for energy products in Ohio and Michigan. The goal was to update antiquated energy production facilities into modern, efficient systems. The projects were to be on university campuses, corporate headquarters, and the like, the lawsuit says. But the bank says that Avers failed to live up to his end of the bargain, citing several problems, including allegations that Avers didn't have sufficient development capital. The lawsuit also says that, quote, after months of working with Avers, it was learned that he had no support staff and was unable to develop the projects put forth to Sigma, nor supply basic technical or commercial information on the projects, and was generally unresponsive to informational requests, unquote. The bank also alleges that Avers and his fellow defendants made false statements to third parties that undermined both Sigma's reputation and its work on the projects. The case was filed in the U.S. District Court for the Eastern District of North Carolina in early January. Sigma and Blue Harbor Energy, which is Sigma's Michigan-based engineering partner, are listed as the plaintiffs. In addition to Avers, the defendants in the case include a company that he runs called Thermal Ventures Incorporated, the Youngstown Trust 2007, and Priscilla A. Ayers, or Avers, excuse me, Carl Avers' wife, and trustee for the Youngstown Trust. The lawsuit's allegations include claims of fraud, breach of contract, and defamation of character and damage to reputation. Bruce Woodry, the president and chief executive of both Sigma and Blue Harbor, declined to comment on the case. David Vessel, the attorney representing Sigma and Blue Harbor, said he didn't know if there was a chance for a settlement. "We are always open to good faith discussions," he says, but adds that the ball is out of his client's court. The defendants have not yet filed an answer to the complaint, and no lawyer for the defendants has been identified. Attempts to obtain a comment regarding the case from the defendants were unsuccessful. The case stands out from others in part due to the transparency of damages being sought. Complaints often simply state that they are seeking damages in excess of a certain threshold, such as $10,000 in state court or $75,000 in federal court. But Sigma's lawsuit says it is seeking $55 million worth of compensatory general damage and even provides a breakdown of past due invoices and lost fees it used to calculate that amount. The lawsuit also seeks additional punitive damages. So how do the damage numbers compare in this case to others in the area? "They're high, but not outrageously so," says John Sasser, a lawyer at Ellis & Winters who is familiar with the local litigation scene. And our next article is written by Monica Chen with a Dateline of Cary. The headline, "Local Coupon Delivery Startup Goes for $2 Million in Venture Cash." Cary partners say they differentiate their service from Groupon with better splits and research. A startup in Cary is seeking venture backing to grow in the online coupon space ruled by Groupon. Twango, which got its name from Tuangu or team buying in Chinese, is seeking financing of $500,000 to $2 million to create a mobile application, expand marketing into additional cities, and hire 24 sales and marketing workers in 2011. Brad Halfordy, co-founder, president, and CEO, says the one-year-old company hopes to raise the money over the next 3 to 4 months. The company currently has 8 employees, including Halfordy, and 2 co-founders, Reed Clevenger and Scott Bowen. Twango states in a securities filing that it has provided more than $1 million in savings to consumers through coupons for local merchants, including 42nd Street Oyster Bar and Jimmy V's Steakhouse. Like Groupon, Twango offers deals from a variety of vendors. Unlike with the discount voucher giant, merchants get to keep 50% to 70% of the revenue generated from coupon sales with Twango, compared to Groupon's 50%. Halfordy and Bowen came from the construction sector, with Halfordy formerly owning his own construction company and Bowen being the former chief technology officer at Fowler Contracting. Clevenger is the owner of iKeeps, a custom storage container maker in Cary. The trio spent the first year developing and refining Twango's proprietary technology. Currently, Twango is in talks with distribution partners to tap into new markets. The company already has expanded into Wilmington, as well as into the British Columbia markets of Kelowna and Whistler. In Canada, the company is partnering with a former IBM executive to open new markets. Various iterations of Groupon's discount voucher meets social media model have become popular in the past year, with Groupon widely viewed as the leader in the space. The Greater Durham Chamber of Commerce launched its own deals program for chamber members a month ago, partnering with Try It Local, a Louisville, Kentucky-based company that offers group discounts through chambers. Although the volume of vouchers sold is lower than through Groupon, the first Try It Local Durham merchant, Pop's Restaurant, sold 105 vouchers. Try It Local differentiates itself from Groupon by offering 70% revenue sharing with merchants and a faster payment turnaround. Sheena Johnson, spokeswoman for the chamber, says merchants are attracted to the deals because the chamber offers marketing in addition to the coupon. When we announce the deals, it goes out to all the social media outlets, Johnson says. They're definitely getting their name out to people in a quicker, faster way. Twango intends to differentiate itself by working more closely with merchants to understand current sales patterns with the goal of more targeted and customized offers. For us, we've been able to coexist with the big boys locally just by working more closely with the vendors and better understanding what their business needs are, Halfordy said. Merrill Mason, a partner at the Smith Anderson Law Firm in Raleigh, says Twango's fundraiser might find investors because the coupon space has created a lot of interest. People are going to talk to them, Mason says, but there's also an issue with Me Too ideas. They have to admit that Groupon is the leader by far. To succeed in the crowded space, a company will need a strong management team with experience in startups, marketing, and sales. Investors also will be looking for contacts, patents, and other advantages to the company, Mason said. They'll need a secret sauce that allows them to compete with Groupon, he said. And now we have an article from the small business section, Money Matters section of the Triangle Business Journal. And this article takes up most of a page, half the page is a large picture of a man and woman in business attire standing in front of a cork board that's covered with pictures of babies on it. The caption reads, Dr. Grace Couchman and Dr. William Meyer joined forces to form Carolina Conceptions, which sees about 80 patients per day. And then under that, there's the headline in bold black lettering, Helping Create Families. Raleigh couple deliver twin boys after in vitro fertilization. Now, this article is written by Richard Rokoski with the Dateline of Raleigh. For many couples, trying to get pregnant is fraught with frustration and heartache. In the past, many couples just accepted their childlessness as their lot in life. But now, there are possible solutions. Dedicated to making families a reality, the doctors at Carolina Conceptions diagnose the problem and then offer a treatment that could include on-site in vitro fertilization, ovulation induction by way of an oral medication or injectable hormone, reproductive surgery to remove fibroids or ovarian cysts or to open blocked fallopian tubes or even surrogacy. The practice, which was co-founded by Dr. William Meyer and Dr. Grace Couchman, works with local sperm banks and regularly recruits egg donors. Carolina Conceptions is affiliated with Rex Healthcare and Blue Ridge Surgery Center, which is part of Wake Med. With 14 employees, Carolina Conceptions averages about 80 patient visits per day and does approximately 400 in vitro fertilization cycles per year, Couchman says. Most are married couples, but we see single, hetero, and gay women and an occasional gay male couple, she adds. Meyer and Couchman, both specialists in obstetrics and gynecology, started their practice 5 years ago. We wanted to provide competitive reproductive services, Meyer says. There wasn't a private practice in the area. At the time, Meyer and Couchman were themselves competitors in providing advanced reproductive and fertilization services. I was at UNC for 15 years and she was at Duke, Meyer notes. We were chief competitors, but I knew her reputation, so I called her. Today, their major competition comes from reproductive centers at Duke and UNC, as well as the North Carolina Center for Reproductive Medicine in Cary. He says, with a $3 million loan from First Citizens Bank, Meyer and Couchman opened their practice in a new three-story brick building near Rex. The practice's geographical reach since has extended beyond the Triangle. It now serves patients in Greensboro, Rocky Mount, Greenville, Fayetteville, Wilmington, and Pinehurst. Though the bulk of referrals come from physicians, Couchman says the best referrals are from former patients who have successfully gotten pregnant and had a child. Heather DeVault is such a patient. DeVault, 33, a senior financial specialist with Progress Energy, and her husband Craig, 36, a technical support statistician at SAS, were married in 2004. They wanted to wait a couple of years before starting a family, DeVault says, and planned to have two children. We first started trying to get pregnant in the fall of 2006 when I was 29 and he was 32, she says. After trying for 6 months on her own, we were encouraged by my OBGYN to begin using Clomid, a low-dose fertility drug, in the spring of 2007. In the fall of 2007, we were referred by my OBGYN to Carolina Conceptions. After several unsuccessful procedures, DeVault became pregnant after in vitro fertilization in November 2008. We were blessed with twin boys, Jack and Mark, on July 15, 2009, she says. Couchman says one of her biggest challenges is trying to meet every couple's goal. For Meyer, it's also trying to keep abreast of all the new treatment modalities and dealing with potential ethical dilemmas and sensitive issues such as egg donations. We're sensitive about how we recruit egg donors because they get paid for their services, not their eggs. Meyer says, adding that egg donors get paid about $3,000. Another sensitive issue involves gestational carriers, commonly known as surrogate mothers. Typically, a couple's fertilized egg is implanted, so there are no biological or genetic ties, explains Couchman. Gestational carriers are paid anywhere from $15,000 to $40,000, Meyer says. As researchers continue to explore the mysteries of human production, there will no doubt be even more options awaiting those wanting to start a family. The field is changing so rapidly, says Meyer. And with our final minutes, we'll read from the TriangleBusinessJournal.com. Here are some of the news you may have missed on TBJ's website. Victoria's Secret closes Raleigh store. Cameron Village has lost one of its staple national brands with the closing of its Victoria's Secret lingerie store. The store closed in late January, and a sign on its door at the corner of Cameron Street and Woodburn Road directs customers to Victoria's Secret's five other Triangle stores, all of which are in mall locations. Victoria's Secret had broke from its traditional mall-based store format when it opened its location at Raleigh's Cameron Village Shopping Center in 2000, next to Great Outdoor Provisional Company. A spokeswoman for Victoria's Secret's parent company, Limited Brands, did not give a reason why the Cameron Village store was closed. Duke ranks 20th in the world for MBA programs. UNC tumbles. The Fuqua School of Business at Duke University can continue to boast of having one of the 20 best MBA programs in the world. Kenan Flagler Business School at UNC Chapel Hill can no longer say that it has one of the top 50 or even top 60. That's according to the 2011 Global MBA Rankings released by the Financial Times of London. While Duke's Fuqua held steady at number 20 for the second straight year, UNC's Kenan plummeted 16 spots to number 62 from its 2010 ranking. North Carolina State University's College of Management was not ranked. IBM commits $150 million to Obama initiative. IBM will provide $150 million in funding this year to support programs that assist entrepreneurs, the company announced Monday as part of the launch of President Barack Obama's Startup America campaign. In a news release, IBM said that its funding would be used to coach and mentor startup businesses throughout the United States, expand education, build skills and mentorship programs in collaboration with the academic and venture capital communities, provide skills and business opportunities to the growing community of software developers who collaborate on emerging technologies. GSK gives up on insomnia drug. Shares of GlaxoSmithKline stumbled after the giant drug company announced that it is discontinuing development on an insomnia drug once thought to have a blockbuster potential. In a short statement issued, GSK and Swiss company Actelion Limited said that they were giving up on the drug almorexant following a review of data from clinical studies on the drug's tolerability. GSK and Actelion did not provide details on the results of those studies. The announcement comes less than 3 years after GSK licensed the rights to almorexant from Actelion, the deal, in which GSK paid $147 million upfront, could have led to total payments of $3 billion to Actelion if almorexant had won regulatory approval and met sales goals. We've run out of time for today's episode of the Triangle Business Journal. Be sure to listen at the same time next week. Hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Derek Frost, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. This program is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast. So long until next time.